Lecture 2, Cicero, 7, April.
Meant it that way, that's a question. Otherwise, very good. Now, I would like to say that was a very good paper, and the best paper you read in my classes. I'm very grateful for that. Now, it appeared to me already at home, but some of you, I'm sure when you heard that paper, that we cannot possibly discuss this wealth of material in one meeting, and so certain pre-adjustments will be necessary. Who was supposed to read the next paper? And Mr. Faulkner, will you have it ready on Thursday? But there is a great probability that you will not read it. There is a certainty that you will not read it at the beginning, and there is a high probability that you will not read it next time at all. Yeah. And I have to rearrange what we read in this course. I'm now contemplating the possibility that we go over from Republican laws to the offices and read only selected passages of De Finibus, because it's of no use to rush. Now let us turn to the points which you have raised. Naturally presupposed quite a bit of knowledge which not everyone here may possess. You did not emphasize the fact, for example, that the Republic is a fragmentary book, because you took it for granted. Therefore, if a certain argument, say against justice, is not met properly, we can't be certain that it wasn't met in the original. Good. Therefore, one must be cautious in one's conclusions. I don't say that you transgress this law, but I only thought it should be emphasized. Secondly, for example, the historical data which you presuppose regarding Roman history. Of course, they are in no way recondite. Everyone who remembers what he learned in high school, I do not know in every high school in this country, so about Roman history, you know, the Romulus, the founder, up to Tarquinius Superbus, that terrible tyrant who was expelled. You know, this kind of thing is perhaps not so generally known. It's the usual date. 753, the foundation of Rome, and 510, the expulsion of the kings. And Cicero lived in the first centuries, let's say about 400 years after the expulsion of the kings. Do you have a clear idea as to how far Scipio brings up the history of Rome?
I don't think his intention is to give a strictly accurate
history. No, I mean, simply, what is your impression as to the latest date to which he leads the argument?
He leaves it vaguely before their own time. I don't believe he takes it right down to the time of the dialogue.
I have the impression that he... yeah, that's true. I also found it. I couldn't find it in exact date. And that he is trying to bring it up to the point at which the Roman constitution was perfected, and not the story of its decay. Yeah, that is probably his intention. But I'm not absolutely sure of that. Now, the other point which you presupposed rather than developed was the concept of the mixed regime. And we mentioned this last time, but of course not everyone present here may know what a mixed regime is. Therefore, would you say something on this subject?
Well, the mixed regime was considered by Scipio that fourth form of government which was superior to any one of the simple forms.
What are the simple forms?
The simple forms, which I mentioned, were kingship, aristocracy and democracy.
So the mixture, the three is a mixed regime. That's number one. And now, to get an idea for those who do not know these older discussions, if you take such a document as the American Constitution or Federalist Papers, you still have there the presence of the idea of the mixed regime. As you have a monarchic element in the American Constitution, who is that? To be quite sure. And Vice President Nixon, potentially, yes. All right, we understand each other. And the aristocratic element? No. No, Senate. The name, the Senate. And what is aristocratic about the Senate? In spite of the conceptual changes? When the first place, pun?
Smaller.
Smaller, yes. And longer tenure. It is a greater approximation to lifelong tenure than you have in the House of Representatives. And the democratic element, of course, would be the House of Representatives. So there is really continuity, historic continuity from these old Greek and Roman speculations up to the American Constitution. What is the fundamental difference, however, between the American Constitution and these older notions? It is, I think it becomes clear to theoretical analysis if one would compare the Federalist Papers with Montesquieu's Spirit of Laws. You know, Montesquieu's Spirit of Laws is the authority to the Federalist Papers. If you read the Federalist Papers and see which political thinker or thinkers is positively referred to with the greatest emphasis, there is only one answer, Montesquieu, Spirit of Laws. And Montesquieu had written a chapter on the English Constitution in the 11th book, chapter 6. That is a key source. This, in its turn, was rewriting of the 6th book of Polybius' history, in which Polybius had presented the Roman Constitution. And Polybius was also the teacher of Cicero. So, you know, Cicero was not known at that time, you must never forget. He was discovered only 130 years ago. But his main thought on this subject was known by a Polybius, with whom Cicero agrees in these matters. Now, what is the difference between the Polybius? Now, I must say this. For example, the notion of checks and balances is already in Polybius. You see that the three elements would check and balance each other. And if there is an element of mechanical construction in that, one does not have to think of Newton, of the Newtonian cosmic system that is already in Polybius, who antedated Newton by 1800 years. But what is the real difference between first the Montesquieu scheme and the Polybian scheme, or Polybian Ciceronian scheme, and then between the Federalist Papers and Montesquieu? That is necessary to mention, that you see, A, how different is what Cicero does from what we understand now by constitutional doctrine, but also see the kinship at the same time. In one word, is the justification of the mixed regime. Actually, in Britain you had the mixed regime by a king, House of Lords, House of Commons. Yeah? For Montesquieu, the key idea justifying the mixed regime, which he does not emphatically call the mixed regime, is individual freedom, individual liberty. You know, you cannot have individual liberty if all power is concentrated in one man or in one body of man. This emphasis on individual liberty is completely absent from Cicero and Polybius. Liberty, yes, liberty of the people, but not liberty of the individual. It's not emphatically the problem. To the same connection belongs to other consideration. In Montesquieu, there is a close connection between the doctrine of the mixed regime and the separation of powers. The three powers, legislative, executive, and judicial. This distinction of the three powers occurs in Aristotle already. That's an old story. But not the separation of powers. Not the separation of powers. With this is connected the other fact. When Polybius describes the Roman constitution, and he says there was one chunk of power with the consul, another big chunk with the senate, another with the popular assemblies. There is no principle involved in this division into chunks. One chunk to say that would be the legislative, the other the executive, and another the judiciary. Each, so to speak, partakes of all of these powers, but a different chunk of it. So, for Rousseau, in Montesquieu's doctrine, the separation of powers is an essential condition, again, for individual liberty. So, this concept of individual liberty is a key thought in Montesquieu, and it is not the key thought in Cicero and Polybius. Now, as for the differences between Montesquieu and the Federalist Papers or the Constitutions, the most important difference is this. As far as I remember now, substantially it is true what I say, but there might be some footnotes necessary of which I don't think of. The original notion of a mixed regime thought of combination, a combination of powers, each ruling in its own right. Take the simple case. You have an hereditary king who owes his power to prescription, going back to William the Conqueror and even to Alfred the Great beyond that. Yeah? Some of you may remember Burke's famous statement on this subject. Then you have hereditary nobility owing its power to nothing but prescription and heredity. And then you have a power of the people, which is also a power in its own right. Now, by virtue of the doctrine of the sovereignty of the people, which became so powerful in the 17th, 18th century, this doctrine was reformulated, and that is the base of the American Constitution, surely, and not yet of Montesquieu. All the power rests originally with the people, and all these powers are delegated powers. The only being which has an inherent power is the people, as the Constitution starts at the beginning, in the preamble. But the people, if it is wise, will delegate the powers to different sets of power holders, a monarchic, an aristocratic, and a democratic element, or from a different point of view to a legislative, executive, and judicial. So this we must keep in mind, that neither the sovereignty of the people nor the individual liberties as a key consideration play any role in this law. I think that we must not expect that here. Good. Now the next point is this. I found quite a few things which you said I knew somehow. Yeah. Being that. But the point which you made, which was new to me, which I found very good, was this. That you said Cicero himself is linked to this group of conversationalists through Rutilius. And Rutilius, or rather Scipio, is linked again to a still older age, with Cato. So we have really a very old Roman wisdom that is claimed, that is very true.
Cato himself was a new man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but what I found particularly gratifying was that you drew attention to the fact that this Cato is praised in the first book also with a view to the great issue of the theoretical and practical. Yeah? You know?
So he's a joint authority.
Yeah, yeah. That I thought was, to me at least, particularly useful. Now, there was another thing which I did not understand. You said the critique of maritime location of a city contradicts the rape of the Sabine women stories. Why?
Well, the Romans themselves were... others needed to be protected against the Romans. The Romans were the alien brothers in this kind of thing.
Oh, I see.
And to go and impute all this wisdom to Romulus for having foreseen and protected the virtue of his citizens.
Yeah, I see. Well, it is, that is a trifle far-fetched. The story of the rape of Sabine women is very important because it is clearly an act of injustice. But I don't see that there is a particular connection with the maritime, with this reject critique of maritime location. Yeah? At any rate, however this may be, you noted quite a few contradictions which we shall also have to discuss later, and you understood them correctly. That has something to do with the noble lie that is present here. And this, of course, raises the whole question of the relation between Cicero's Republic and Plato's Republic. Now, how would you define it on the basis of what you have read? I mean, let us go back to beginnings, because not everyone may know as much as you do. Therefore, start from scratch.
Well, first of all, if
what did Plato do in his Republic in the most general way? And what does Cicero do in his Republic?
Well, first of all, it raises the question, what is justice?
Yeah, and what is a just political order? As inseparable.
And it leads to this, the discussion of justice and injustice, the unjust speech, leads to the instruction.
That you emphasized very well, and we come to that later. That also was a very good observation. But what is Cicero's or Scipio's criticism of Plato's Republic here?
The ideal is not good enough. We want to point out in the concrete the political principles, the nature of the political.
In other words, Plato's best city is one which exists only in speech. Yeah? And here he wants to show one which exists in deed. Why is this better?
Well, I think it's part of the emphasis of the whole book that it's more practical.
Yeah, but still, sure, that is very true. But why is it more practical? I mean, what is the defect of a best city which exists only in speech as a blueprint?
It's difficult to act on. Especially
why not? You know blueprint, and then you say we are going. Every rocket sent up is based on a blueprint, and the people act on it all the time. Yes.
Well, I was going to say, because as a blueprint, it fails to perform the function which a regime is supposed to perform, making it bold and shape the lives of
men. Establish it, and it performs.
Well, it's impossible to be established.
Why?
A kind of quote and unquote. His state may perhaps be an excellent one, but it is quite unsuited to men's actual lives and habits.
Good. That is then a very serious, substantive criticism of Plato's Republic. Yeah? But we are speaking now only of the formal color, of this formal element, a blueprint best state and an actual best state. What's the difference?
Well,
whoever wants to come.
The theoretical life. If the state cannot be actually established, then the theoretical life. And then the claim of the practical life to be superior to
whatever life. Sure, that would follow. I mean, that is true, but that is not a much more simple point in relation to practice problems.
Well, the difference between act and potency.
And?
The difference between act and potency. An established state is actual, a blueprint state is potential, unreal, not being.
Yeah, but how would. Let us see, you are a straight political scientist, yeah? I don't know what... You are too much of a theoretician.
And then I think what you're saying is that an actual state, like Rome, was built up with many men, and this is going to be better than one man by offering
the gift. In the Republic, there are 1,000 citizens. That's not one man. In Plato's Republic. What do you mean?
But the regime is conceived by Plato.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's another concept. Yeah, but we come to that later. But I would say this first. I gave the example of these rockets. We have blueprints. And then what do you read next day in the newspaper? Yeah? Good. So, in other words, it may be the most wonderful blueprint. You can't be sure that it will work. If you have an actual best city, then you know what is work, because the conclusion from actuality to possibility is valid. The conclusion from a merely proposed possibility to true possibility is not valid, because there are all kinds of errors. That's number one. Now, the other point which one of you mentioned is, of course, that also the difference between a blueprint made by a single man, however wise, is said to be inferior to something which is a product of collective wisdom of the ages. That's another consideration. Needless to say that the communism and equality of women business and rule of the law are completely out. I mean, that there may have been a discussion of it in the lost parts, but that is not the thing. Yes. Now, you link this up, or rather, you did not link it up, but you suggested this as a problem, this peculiar feature that in the Republic the best regime is presented as a reply to the criticism of justice. Someone says justice is bunk. And then Socrates, in order to refute it, draws a picture of a perfectly just society, which makes perfect sense if the deeper meaning of that critique of justice is you cannot rule a state justly. And if the whole state cannot be ruled justly, then justice is possible only in little places. Yeah, when you go to a grocer and buy